Start.
Thank you. Thanks, Ashley. Well, welcome everybody to the ordinary meeting of Central Tablelands Water, 20th of August 2025. And I'd like to start by acknowledging that we acknowledge the Wiradjuri people, who are the traditional custodians of the land. I'd also like to pay respect to their people, both past and present, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal Australians who are present. In accordance with the Central Tablelands Water Code of Meeting Practice, this meeting will be audio recorded and will be uploaded to Council's website within 2 weeks after the meeting. By speaking at the Council meeting, you agree to be audio recorded. Please ensure that if and when you speak at this Council meeting, that you ensure that you are respectful to others and use appropriate language at all times. Whilst Council will make every effort to ensure that audio recordings are available, it takes no responsibility for and cannot be held liable for technical issues beyond its control. Audio recordings are a free public service and are not an official record of Council meetings. For a copy of the official public record, please refer to Council's Business Papers and Minutes page on Council's website. Council does not accept any responsibility for any verbal comments made during Council meetings which may be inaccurate, incorrect, defamatory or contrary to law, and does not warrant nor represent that the material or statements made during the meeting are complete, reliable, accurate or free from error. Okay, on to item four, apologies. We have an apology from Councillor Gostwich.
Yes.
Yes, we had to go to his grandmother's funeral.
Funeral, yeah. That's
she was over 100, so.
Oh, really? Wow.
So when he told me, I said, oh, that's sad. He said, oh, no, she was over 100.
Over 100. That's a good innings. Well, so could I have a mover? We agree to that leave of absence. So, Councillor Newstead, Councillor Parlett. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. It's carried. Item five, confirmation of minutes from the previous meeting. We had a meeting on the 18th of June. Could I have a mover? Councillor Parlett, seconder. Councillor Newstead. Are there any issues with the minutes? Anything needs to be changed, fixed? No? Okay, I'll move that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Item six, matters arising. Are there any matters arising from previous minutes that we're not going to cover in the rest of the meeting today? No? Nothing? Okay, I'll move on. Disclosures of interest. Does anyone have anything to disclose?
Nothing to declare.
No, I've got nothing to declare. Moving on. Normally we'd put a public forum into this next slot, but we seem to have the public forum at the beginning. General Manager?
Through Mr. Chair, we've got no applications for the public forum, which we would try and hold it prior to the commencement of the council meeting. No applications.
Okay, thank you. Moving on. Chairperson's minutes. I don't have a formal minute, just a quick informal mention of a range of activities that have been happening over the last couple of months since our last meeting that Charlie and I have been involved with, particularly around there's been a lot of movement on the various water security projects that we're involved with, particularly the sub-regional town water strategy and the globular water security project. I won't go into any detail of those because we'll cover those in an item later on in the meeting. We signed that agreement with Orange Council just prior to the last council meeting, if you remember, to transfer or set up the governance rules for transfers of water between us and Orange Council. There was some good media that happened after that, you know, certainly on Facebook, and Orange Council put it on their website, prominently displayed for quite some time, which is good. So it's got out there. Has there been any responses from the community, do you know?
I've just seen a couple.
Okay.
Not as negative as I would have thought. potentially. That's a forum for people to blast away at. I think there were some positive comments, which was good.
Well, that's good. And I've heard just anecdotally, certainly people have commented that they think it's a great idea to improve the networking across our region.
I think resilience was another term I saw someone use.
Yes.
That provides that level of assurance, I guess.
Yeah, so that's encouraging signs. So no obvious negativity, and certainly all we've ever heard has been positive idea. The water security projects that I mentioned, we've had support from the JO for our position in relation to the Globular Water Security Project, which I'm sure Charlie will talk about a bit later. So there's been some redrafting of the specific wording around the support for particular options. So, you know, really trying to prioritise the raising of Lake Rollins over and above the pipeline, and that the pipeline is an ancillary to that. So the raising of the dam wall is the highest priority. It can be supported by the pipeline. So there was a shift in the wording to make sure that was the case. That was what we took to Minister Jackson when Charlie and I met her a few weeks ago. Well, gosh, it must be a couple of months ago now. So we went down to Sydney and had a meeting with the minister. And we also had a meeting with Phil Donato and the other relevant mayors to discuss the broader water security issues, all the various projects, and we're basically trying to get a consensus opinion about what the water security and what the networking setup should look like. So we've had some good movement in the last little while. But we'll talk about that in more detail a bit later, I'm sure. Did you want to comment on any of that now?
I think the only to add is that there's another meeting being organised by Phil Donato with the minister on the 17th of September, I think 15th. It is.
Oh, it's in the middle of September. Yeah,
yeah, so
it could be 17th.
Where the mayors and GMs from Cabon, Orange and CTW are going to be addressing the minister again with. The topic is around the sub-regional town water strategy and I guess trying to reinforce some of the outcomes of that report and what the findings were to, I guess, give us some insight into the key components of that about collaborating together. So the objective of that meeting is to try and raise the profile of the sub-regional town water strategy and the benefits that brings, and hopefully whether it will make a difference to any funding, future funding that we'll get. The National Water Grid's already been submitted for that funding application, but I'm pretty sure the Minister will support us in that if there's any opportunities. That's a good thing.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. So that's just me for my brief informal minute. So I don't think I need to put that, just moving on. Next one is councillor representation. Does anyone wish to mention? We all attended, well, most of you attended the last meeting.
Not me. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Instead of councillor Nash, that was on the 18th of June. Some met with the members of the PCG, the Bulabula Project PCG, in here. So councillor Newstead, you were here for that. Councillor Gossett was here, is that right? Who else was here?
You came for that.
Did I think you did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've only missed one meeting, I think that's all. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was when we had that presentation from the two members of the project control group from DQ.
Yes, I was definitely.
I remember that you were here, councillor. Yes, you said all the right things. Yes, so that was great.
And Mr. Chair, if I could ask to help our record system, if councils are in attendance at a and representing CTW of a meeting of whatever it might be, can we ask that a basic report be provided so that we can include it into our documentation, so that we can know what the purpose of the meeting was, if there was anything in the meeting of interest that you wanted to share with the council. So we just ask that if any councillor represents CTW, that we just get a little note back to say what it was about. Probably good, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be more than one paragraph at most. Yeah.
Dot point.
A few dot points, yeah. My representation last month, okay, there was the board meeting, the meeting with the PCG here, that was the 18th and 25th of June. 1st of July was the media announcement in Parks for our disaster funding with Minister Saffin, which I guess you could probably talk about a bit later. That was good, that was a good thing, so we went to that, so a bit of media for CTW, which is good. 2nd of July was the opt-in mayor's meeting for the JO. 10th of July, meeting with Phil Donato, the water security projects. 15th of July, meeting with Minister Jackson in Sydney. 30th of July was the JO water portfolio mayor's meeting. 31st of July, the JO board meeting in Parks. And then I met earlier this week with the general manager in Norwich. So.
You've been busy.
Plus sundry emails and phone calls. No, it's been a busy, good busy, hasn't it? I think in this last couple of months.
I must say that Phil Donato did come to one of our council meetings. I think he was sick.
I was sick, yeah. Yes.
And I did reinforce to him that we need the wall, raise the wall, Phil. It's the only way to go.
Thank you.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So he's getting it from all quarters, which is great. No, I think he's very supportive. He's prepared to take our view on this. He's prepared to go into bat to try and line up ducks with ministers and so on. So it's good. And actually, it was really obvious that, you know, when this media scrum in Parks the other day, he and Minister Saffin were clearly good, very friendly. Like, his relationship with ministers in the current government is very, very good. So, you know, he's well liked, well regarded. Okay, we are on to notices of motion. Okay, General Manager.
I haven't received any notices, Mr. Ching.
Okay. Item 12, reports of staff. So we'll move on to page 12, Council's organisation structure. The recommendation here is that Council adopt the organisation structure shown in the report with Directorates of Corporate Services, Finance and Operational and Technical Services. Can I have a move that, please? Councillor Nash and Councillor Newstead. General Manager.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair. This just highlights what some of the discussions we've had in the past about how we go forward with the structure, I guess in that executive level. It was important as we went through this process to try and understand the key functions of council, and there was some areas where we didn't have the necessary attention that was due to some of those functions. So this new structure enables us to have more of a consistent view and focus on those key important areas of the council business. And so I'm feeling pretty comfortable that, assuming we can fill all the positions, that we'll be able to really make some progress in those areas and firm that up going forward. So I'm optimistic about the outlook.
Very good.
Any questions or comments? Okay, nothing there. Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. 2022. The LG New South Wales Annual Conference. The recommendation is the Council give approval to the Chairperson, Deputy Chairperson, General Manager and their representative to attend the LG New South Wales Annual Conference in Penrith in November. Appoint the Chairperson or their chosen delegate to be the voting delegate at the conference. And thirdly, to support the Riverina Waters motion to the conference, advocating for inclusion of county councils in the DA process. And I think you will see the letter that's there from Riverina. Could I have a mover, please?
I'll do it again.
Councillor Nash, seconder. Councillor Best, thank you. General Manager.
Mr. Chairman, through you, it's... So, I think in the past, certainly last year, we had two councillors attend, and we're looking to try to get two councillors again this year. So, really, it's up to the councillors to
determine
who can go and who they wish to send, and I guess who's going to be that person that's going to vote on the day at the conference.
Well, that'd be the chairman,
wouldn't
it? If he's attending.
If he's attending, I probably will be able to. I'll be flying back from New Zealand probably the day of or the day before, so I probably will be able to be there. In fact, we'll probably be flying in and out of Sydney, so, and this is Penrith, so I probably will be able to attend. As long as I can get a lift home.
No, you have to walk.
I don't have a very good record of having lifts home from local government New South Wales conferences. Do you remember that, Marlene?
Yes.
I got COVID.
COVID, yeah.
So that was bad. And I was out for the count for about 2 weeks. It was terrible.
Mr. Chairman, you're putting your hand up?
I will put my hand up with the proviso that I may have to step away if, for whatever reason, that doesn't line up, the ducks don't line up with my trip away. But I think I'll be back. I'm pretty certain.
So, through Mr. Chairman, we'll have to have confirmation. So we need to submit through to the LG New South Wales of who our delegates are going, but particularly who is the voting delegate. So we're going to have to make a call on that fairly soon.
Yeah, I'm already going with Colin.
With Colin, yeah.
Time out.
Yeah, I won't be going. I don't know about Craig. Can't remember who's going with Blanchard Council.
About you, Jen?
I can probably do that one. I do work. It's a Sunday. It starts, doesn't it? I should be able to get someone to come to my shop. Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Because
I'm the other one. I haven't decided yet, actually. I haven't looked at what's on the program for it yet.
Yeah. Mm. So you
would Grenfell be sending people?
Well, we haven't decided yet, but we're waiting to see what was actually on the program for it. That's all.
So you're going?
Yeah, I'm going with Gabon this time.
Okay.
I guess this one in particular is important that CGW is there and involved, because if we decide today to support this motion with Riverina, it would be good if we're there. And there's a whole range of all these other projects that we're involved with at the moment, which could get an airing, so it's worthwhile us being there. So yeah, I'll hand up to be there and write. Yep. I'll just quickly check to make sure that that's correct.
Craig's not here to talk to that. But
no. Look, I'm pretty certain that I'll be... I might be returning on that day, on the Sunday, I think. In which case, I'll be in Sydney, so... I think that first afternoon is usually just a meet and greet, and might be a few talks, but nothing much. Yeah, and then the real hefty happens the next day and the day after.
Does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Councillor Pallett, you'll be there. So it's you and I, and General Manager.
Craig.
Maybe Craig.
Maybe Craig.
Yeah. Craig attended last year.
Yeah. Mm. Enjoyed it, I think. Mm. Mm.
For clarification of the resolution, are you giving approval to the chairperson, the deputy chair, councillor and general manager to attend?
My understanding is that we put the invitation through to the deputy chair.
Right.
If he's unable to attend.
Then James, I can do that.
Good. Councillor Pallett is the...
I don't think he can go this year or something, but I could be wrong, so don't take that as gospel.
Mm. So I could, after deputy chairperson, just put in brackets all nominated councillor. Mm.
Yeah.
Just for the so the resolution is clear.
Thanks.
Now, can we talk to the item 3, the motion? You want to have a few words on that, Charlie?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is something that's been going on for several years. 2021, when the planning portal was put in place, there was consultation with councils, and unfortunately that consultation didn't extend to county councils. As being a water utility, it's really critical that we get involved in development, particularly with consents, but also, probably more importantly, with any substantial development that's going on, subdivisions of the like. And unless we've got a good rapport with the planning department of our constituent councils, some of that stuff gets slipped through and doesn't get referred to us. And there's no need for that to be referred to us at this point in time. So this motion went to the LG New South Wales last year, and it didn't get supported by about 2 votes, I believe. So the motion, we're proposing to put the motion to the LG New South Wales conference for them to advocate on behalf of county councils and to make amendments to the Local Government Act to enable that to occur. I would just say it's super important. There has been a couple of occasions when things have slipped through, and unfortunately it's the customer who bears the burden of that, because we come along later and say, oh, by the way,
yes,
here's all the requirements you now have to do to follow our processes, and it comes as a shock to them. So if we can become part of the referral process through the planning portal, that automatically means that we get included. There is likely to be impact on us in terms of resourcing. We'd expect to see more development applications come through. Most of the time they're fairly straightforward, and we would develop templates that would enable us to, on a basic planning matter, it would be here are the conditions, and then enables us also when something else might be coming through that's a little bit more complex, that we get that opportunity to engage with the developer and try to determine some of the complexities of the development prior to it hitting the ground, and so we can have conversations with them. It's very important, and that's why we're putting up that Riverina Water being leading it for the county councils, which has been fantastic. They're also trying to advocate through the government departments to get this through as well, but this motion is really just to go to the LG New South Wales conference to get their support and advocation into the state governments with us as well. So.
I think it's vital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just, you've got to have the infrastructure there for a big development, and you don't know about it coming, so you're not ready.
Mm.
Yeah, and then everyone gets a shock. So we've really got to speak up about it. Have to get up to the microphone, Mr. Chair, and speak.
Well, depending, I guess Riverina Water will probably get up to the mic. And it's usually, as you know, they're they try and get them through very, very quickly. So if you end up with two people saying the same thing, they don't like that.
Well, you just
but
stand
I'm very
up
happy.
There.
I'm very happy to do so.
No,
and we'll, I'll talk with River Inner Water on the, beforehand and decide whether or not we need to add two voices and can we say different things? So we can do that.
Yeah, I would.
I think the motion needs to be fairly succinct because it's quick. Everyone's trying to get everything up and it just needs to say exactly what it is clearly and then a little bit of supporting stuff underneath it which says why. I mean, the government's invested another $20 million in upgrading the portal, so I think half the point is that the whole portal system is it's just not a good system, and I think we're going to have to be $36 million there to spend it all up, so whether or not they can incorporate this in all that money, I don't know.
Surely they can.
That's just to fix the problems they've got with it now. So.
Well, I mean, this is more than that. This, I mean, I certainly agree with that, but this you probably need to change in the Act to even enable them to make the changes to the portal to include county councils.
Mm-hmm.
So they will only modify the portal according to what the Act says they have to do. So if we're not even included in the Act, then they won't even bother.
Is telecommunications in the portal or not?
I can't answer that. I'm
not sure, because that's another area, same sort of thing.
Mm. Actually, yeah. Any other comments or questions about item 3? Everyone happy with item 3? Okay. Nothing more? Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. It's a good discussion. Item 12.3, Safe and Secure Water Program and Stream 2 Strategic Funding. The recommendation here is that Council note the report and approve to continue with the strategic projects as outlined in Stage 1 of the Safe and Secure Water Program. That's the SSWP 216 funding deed. I do know we supported that before. And secondly, the Council endorsed the signing of the funding for Stage 2 delivery of the Safe and Secure Water Program funding. Can I have a mover? Councillor Newstead, seconder?
Yes.
Councillor Best, thank you. General Manager?
Through Mr. Chairman, just the background again, just to reiterate that this program came about through a funding stream from the state government. And we took the opportunity to make a submission under that funding program to undertake some strategic planning work. We developed the 9 tasks of the project. Councillors might recall it was quite difficult at the time, the time constraints we had to understand the cost associated with delivering the entire project. We were able to get the department to split the deed so that we can do it in 2 distinct stages. Stage 1 being that planning phase, so developing the scope of works for the 9 tasks, which we worked with the department on that. Unfortunately, the department are under-resourced and trying to get information back from them has been really difficult and time-consuming. And nevertheless, we were able to get the scope of works to a point when the department were relatively happy. We just had to do some minor amendments before we were to go back out to the market for formal request for quotes. We did go and test the market. So we sent the request for quotes out with the scope of works for each of those tasks to try and understand which consultants would be interested, and B, how much would the likely cost be, so we were able to get some estimates on that. Unfortunately, when we got the prices back, it came in just shy of $500,000, which, councils recall, we put $300,000 in the budget, just as a what we thought might have been a reasonable estimate to target. So well above that. And so I took the initiative to try to see if there was an alternate way to deliver the projects. So I went out to the market for consultant who could potentially work internally for us, who could manage the delivery of these projects. And I was trying to be selective about the consultant who we would engage, who would have be subject matter experts. And so we get the benefit of having the consultant working with us in-house, but has the capability to deliver some of these tasks. So I went to the market with requests for quotes, and they have come back, and it's enabled the project budget to be reduced down to around that $330,000 to deliver the 9 tasks under stage 2. So the request in the report is that we get the endorsement from council to proceed to stage 2. As I indicated, it's a separate deed, so it hasn't been signed at this point. It hasn't been created really at this point until we can firm up the figure with the department. So the department will fund 50% of the total value that we put in on the deed. There is, like, I would suspect that we'll probably put a bit of a contingency factor in there. But hypothetically, councils, if we had the project delivered at $350,000, council need to provide 50% of that, which is $175,000. We currently have the $300,000 in the budget. 50% of that is council funding, 50% of that is the state funding. So it would mean that council would have to fund an additional $25,000 in that regard, above $150,000 that's already budgeted. So my recommendation is that we proceed to stage 2. And what I would like to emphasise is the critical nature of these projects, the importance of these projects to help inform our decisions going forward. They also align directly with the regulatory assurance framework that we now, under the department, that's their guidelines for councils or utilities to do their planning. So these projects align with that. And I believe that the outcomes of the project will give us data and the evidence to help inform the decisions that we need to make going forward. We're at a critical point in our cycle, I think, that we need to start building on the facts, on the data, to be able to make those informed decisions and be confident with the decisions that we do make going forward. So it's really critical that we do these projects, and I'm suggesting to the council we take the opportunity of the 50% funding. It's certainly going to be probably slightly above our committed $300,000. But it's a worthwhile project.
I think congratulations and well done, Charlie. Yes. Get that going. Definitely agree that it all needs to be done.
So it seems a bit like there's two sort of separate, you know, you've got an engineering stuff, but also you've got a business case, you know, you've got like business activity statements, workforce plans, sort of two separate things, isn't it? Like you've got your first four are probably all, you know, evaluating capacity in the network. It's sort of separate, different to doing, you know, asset management plans, isn't it? It's sort of two separate things. You've got to get one person to do the whole lot.
The person that has, like, if we do proceed, the person that we would likely to engage, they have technical background. So they will do all the asset type work. But for the capacity and capability, so item 3 of the tasks, that would be undertaken by an external consultant.
So sort of good.
So there's a
mix. 3 or 4 to be engineering or more, you know.
Yeah. And the beauty of this person having that technical background is that they can make sure the scope of work is appropriate, complies with the department, and that they can manage the external consultants to deliver those in accordance with. So that's important too. And one of the other elements of the RFQ for the consultant is that which is why I thought it was important for them to work internally. They need to impart that knowledge onto our staff. Quite often when you do these type of projects, we get a document from a consultant and it sits on the shelf and it doesn't do anything for us. What I really want to take the opportunity on this occasion is to get the consultant working with us in-house. And I'm hoping if we can fill some of the vacant positions at the moment, but one of the outcomes of this project is that that consultant has to impart that knowledge onto our staff. So we don't just get documents that we haven't had involvement with, we haven't been engaged with, but we're not likely to pick it up and run with it when it's gone. So it was pretty important to make sure that we get engagement in-house with our own staff to make sure that we continue with these projects going forward.
Makes a lot of sense.
Thanks, Charlie. Any further comment?
So once we agree to this, it'll go back out to get, see whether stage 2 is going to get funded, and then you'll be able to do the RFQ on your delegation.
Okay, if there's no further comment, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Item 12.4. Central West Water and Sewer Program Flood Damage Reimbursement. Recommendation here is the council note the report in the reimbursement of costs associated with November 2022 flood impacts. Mover, Councillor Parlett, and Councillor Best. You. General Manager.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. This is a great outcome, really, and we're very fortunate for the advocacy that all the previous General Manager and councillors have undertaken to get this across the line. It was really disappointing during the event and after the event that water infrastructure wasn't considered essential. that was bizarre. So this is a really good outcome. What I would say to this is that the Reconstruction Authority is still working out the guidelines. So the guidelines haven't been finalised yet. We're talking directly with them. You would think that reimbursement is pretty easy guideline. You just reimburses. So it's likely we're going to have to jump through some hoops to get this, and it's $300,000 that they've allocated to us. I think what's going to happen here is that we're going to have to demonstrate the expenditure.
Just for the expenditure.
So exactly. So I've spoken with Director of Finance to identify that, and after we get through the audit process, etc., we will then start to look at bringing all that information together. It's years old, as you can appreciate, so it's going to take a bit of time to bring it all together. And the figure, the $300,000, actually came about because we had to make estimates at the time. So we didn't have firm costings on stuff. So again, it's going to be a hard job for the finance department to try and bring all that together. So we'll have to wait and see. If the figure comes in at 300, we'll get 300. If it's over 300, we'll get 300. If it's 250, I think we'll probably get 250. So, but it's a great outcome either way, that we get some money back for the cost incurred. And the fact that they've recognised it is essential.
It's good.
It does create a bit of a precedent, which was probably why it took 2 years for...
You'd probably find you've spent a fair bit of money. Most of your gara would have been wiped out, wouldn't it?
Well, there was certainly the main pump station that was bowled over. There was a lot of services that were damaged. So, and then there was the issue in Manildra. So it was pretty widespread. And obviously the funding from the government, I think parks are getting new on a $20 million of that because they had a lot of infrastructure that was damaged. So it's a really, yes, we've spent a lot of money. How much? We'll find out.
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing, it's really important that we spend a lot of, like we do spend a fair bit of energy on this and get it right.
Yeah.
Because this is an opportunity and we want to be seen in the future that we've done the right thing by them. We haven't just pulled the figure out of our hat. If this happens again, that we could be trusted to come back with the right figures. You know, we had a lot of pipe work undermined and stuff like that. I mean, that was, a big expense with all that sort of things. So I think it's important we get it all right, and give them the exact figures and say this is what it's cost us. And yeah, so
I totally agree with you, and I think, but it should be all figures, as in everything, as in.
That's what I'm thinking.
So even if the general manager had to spend an extra amount of time dealing with the issues, or if the staff in any part of the organisation had to go and over and above just to deal with that particular issue, then that should be itemised.
Yes. For you, Mr. Chairman, those costs, the indirect costs, the risk you refer, wouldn't have been captured at the time. And the other thing to point out with this, some of the work is yet to be completed, particularly with the Yugara booster pump station. That's still to be completed. The Manilda main, there's a temporary main was put in there, and that was expensed. But that's yet to be finished as well. So the point I'd point out to council is that some of the money is sunk, obviously, but some of the money, we haven't completed the works as yet. But we do have commitments in our budget to complete those works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of how they do, as the general manager said, the assessment process is to, obviously, we might have to get in and prioritise those works to get them finished to actually access the funds.
Access the funds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There is some dependencies too, like the Manildon, where that temporary system is. Cabong Council need to reinstate a pedestrian bridge there for us to then relocate the pipe to be mounted on the pedestrian bridge. So there's a few dependencies that we're relying on prior to us being able to complete the work too. So there's going to be some challenges in that.
Mm.
And I don't know whether they're going to accept estimates for future works.
Mm.
So that's going to be, that will be one of the challenges we will face.
That should be the case though for most houses.
Yes.
Most people have to wait for something before they can do something else when it's like a disaster.
The terminology is reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of sets the tone of how they will approach it.
Mm.
I dare say they're not going to accept if we haven't finished a project, there's going to be a line in the sand.
Mm.
Well, I know they've put the tender out, haven't they, for the bridge?
The bridge.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I didn't think it was going to be too long away, really.
For you, Mr. Chairman, we were fortunate enough that we did create a council and we were able to get to the cost of the immediate disaster response, the recovery, the clean-up, and we kept those books open for a period of time.
Mm.
So we do have those costs. Mm. We have captured those costs.
Mm.
So I think they're pretty clear-cut. The issue of some of this work that's contingent to be done, well, that's going to be another, as the general manager indicated, that's going to be another, that's a different sort of category, and that really will depend on how they determine how they're going to assess that.
I think the other councils involved are in the same boat, and Parks, I think, we're talking about $20 million is what they got or something of that ilk. There's no way they will have spent all of that money up until now. So
I think
the expectation is going to be that, any work that still needs to be done will probably get funded, I'm guessing. I mean, that's a guess.
We will certainly argue that point.
Yeah.
You can put a pretty good argument for it.
Yeah, and it's not just
included in a budget. We can't just allocate money willy-nilly. It's got to be budgeted for it.
Indeed. Yeah. But it was good news, and big media scrum in Parks, which I attended, and all the mayors were there, and the minister was there, and Phil Donato was there, and then literally a scrum, like, was every media was there. It was good.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, I think the fact that been the precedent set in the Northern Rivers was a factor in that determination.
Yes.
A bit of guilt.
And this all came out of the budget. This the latest New South Wales State budget, which I read through. It didn't look for anything of interest, but I did notice that the Lobula Water Security Project was in the budget again, this time written as $7.8 million rather than $7.7 million. So we did ask the minister at the time when we met with her. I'm assuming that's not new money. She said, no, that's just old money. That's just updated. Just updated.
Very quick to respond to that
one. You're very quick to respond to that. But it highlights the point that when you're reading budget documents from the New South Wales government, you're often not reading, you're not getting indications of new money being put. It's often it's just an indication of this is a project which is being funded. Some of the money that's there that's presented has already been expended. Expended. It's not new money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I can just add to that, in the budget section there, I've just indicated that whatever monies we do get reimbursed for, the intent is to put that back into the operational reserve so that it can be used for that purpose. I wanted to highlight that the use of the money would go back into operation.
Well, go back into the bucket of money that you spent it from, presumably.
Which
operation? To be technically correct here, some of it was operational, some of it was capital. So some of that money, technically, what the sunk money on those infrastructure projects that's been spent would have come from the infrastructure reserve or infrastructure restriction.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the operational items, the immediate response and the post-recovery costs and cleanup and everything, no expense. So that's money that we basically sunk. You know, we covered that cost.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, just for councillors' information, is that we also, some of the councillors here would remember that we did also offer a water allowance of 35 kilolitres,
yes.
As well, and that came to about, I think it might have been about $30,000 or something as well. But that's obviously not something that the Construction Authority, because that was a voluntary decision of council. We gave everyone in the village an allocation of 35 kilolitres to allow them to clean up, and clean up their assets and their buildings and all of them for the recovery. And everyone in the village, we actually got a map out, and we actually mapped it, actually received that. So that was another cost that we actually incurred, but that was a decision that was made after, considered by council at the time, and it was thought to be a fair and reasonable course of action to take.
Yes.
But I'm not suggesting that we certainly would try and claim for those funds, because
Why not?
It was a decision that was at the discretion. I don't think they would consider that.
Well,
it can be mentioned, certainly,
I think it would be, even as an amber claim, we do it. Yes, you're right, it was a decision of council, but then that would be a normal, reasonable use of water in the aftermath of an event like that.
Well, through Mr. Chairman, it was done because there was various appeals and funding that was being made available for recovery, particularly in Yagara at the time, and council, rather than to give it to some other body or group or whatever, allocate funds or support those funding appeals, council decided to actually directly provide that allowance to everyone in the village.
Well, it's because of the flood, though, isn't it?
We'll pose the question.
Looking in discussions with when that was a decision of council, we made that we decided to do that as a, you know, to help out the community out there.
We did.
Yeah, but why did we do that?
That's what I'm saying about the, I want to be able to stand behind what we put to them, because if this happens in 3 years' time or 4 years' time, I don't want them to look back at us and say, they got us for everything they could. I want to say, well, no, these are the costs that we incurred and reimburse us for those costs.
Yeah.
So there'd be things like the board water alert that occurred.
Correct.
Mm.
So there'd be a lot of unaccounted for costs in that, if that makes sense. Like a lot of the water that was used for flushing and, like, that was weeks worth of work. So there's going to be costs that probably not even captured in our ledgers,
that
we've incurred.
Mm.
Not that it, sorry, they'll be captured in our ledgers, but not easily not identifiable
against that project.
So it's going to be a little bit tricky, there's no doubt about it, but we will just, we'll make sure, I guess, Council Best, what you're defining is that we need to justify and be comfortable with the costs that we put forward, that they reflect and represent what we did at the time and what the impact was.
That's what we are, though, we're water. Yeah, I reckon go for it.
Okay, if there's no further comments, we'll move on. So I'll put that, all in favour?
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Item 12.5, council meeting dates. The recommendation is, as you see there, continue to hold our ordinary meetings bi-monthly on the third Wednesday of the month for the remainder of this council term. Those dates are listed there. The only changes, there's a 29th of October, was mentioned there for reasons, and also we will need to discuss when to have the December meeting. And then secondly, extraordinary meetings may be arranged if required. So could I have a mover? Councillor Nash, seconder. Councillor Newstead, General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might ask for the Corporate Services Manager and Director of Finance to make commentary to this report.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Basically, we brought this report back from last council meeting to confirm the meeting dates moving forward. After consideration, we worked out that we didn't need to adjust the meetings as we had proposed last council meeting, but they could stay at the usual third Wednesday of the month, except October. Of this year, we would like to move to the last Wednesday of the month to enable us to capture the quarterly budget review in that meeting, and also to allow us to align with the compliance of the Office of Local Government to bring it to Council before we submit it. As we move through, there may be a need for extraordinary meetings to be able to pass things through Council before we submit them. But the dates that we have put forward here are what's proposed at this point in time.
Thank you. I think we'll work on the October meeting first, and I'll go to December in a sec. So is everyone happy with that change for the October meeting? Can everyone make the 29th of October?
That's
the
2 weeks.
Sorry?
It's one of when? It was on the 15th of October?
It was correct. It was. Yes, it's been moved from back. Is it when? Other next meeting is when, isn't it? That's the October meeting.
No. It's October.
Yeah.
September, October, that's right. Yeah. Yes, 2 months away. Yes, it's the next wedding meeting. I can certainly make the 29th.
Yeah,
in fact, I prefer the 29th for reasons. Councillor Best, you looking at your diary?
Yeah, no, it should be fine, thanks.
Okay. Well, it's in your neck of the woods, so you'll be around, hopefully. Okay. So that's fine. Now, December, our normal meeting time would coincide roughly with Christmas.
17th.
Roughly.
It does fall before.
Falls on the 17th.
I guess we need to check just to make sure that everyone's happy with that, whatever that date
is. Standard date is the 17th.
17th.
The third Wednesday.
Which is close to Christmas if people were going away, that sort of thing. So I think I'm fine for the 17th.
Yeah, fine.
Councillor Pallett, you're fine.
For you, Mr. Chairman, the only issue is the December meeting is, historically, we've actually put the accounts to the public and had the auditor present at that December meeting. In accordance with the Act, strictly speaking, we're supposed to actually do that within 5 weeks of getting the audit reports, if you're going with a strict interpretation of the Act. So if you get the audit reports, say, on the 7th of October, you're required to have a meeting by the 14th of November.
Mm-hmm.
Or... And if the 5th of December is the last, is the last date that you can get the audit report, so to get your statements in by the 31st. So within the Act, it says the 5th of December is the last date that you can actually present to the public. In saying that, it hasn't been an issue that's been raised with us. It's never been raised as an issue. As long as you go through the process and follow it, no one's actually said to us, oh, hang on, you're a bit outside the date here, you're outside the time range here for doing it. No one said that, no one's picked it up. It hasn't been something that the Office of Local Government have really honed in on, but it is something to be aware of. And you can't actually affix that date to present it to the public till the October meeting, because you must have received the audit reports before you fix the date in accordance with the Act. So it does provide a logistical challenge.
Challenge, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. There's no advantage in bringing it up to November, is there? If we just had a month and then another month after it, because we'd still be outside of that time, wouldn't we? For public.
You could have another meeting in November if you wanted to. That would be an option.
You know, in place of December meeting, you need it.
The difficulty is you've got to set the date at the October meeting, because you can't set the date until you actually physically receive that audit report. In accordance with the audit engagement plan that we have, the audit officers have said they'll hopefully get us the report by the 7th of October, but that's... It's sometimes a bit later than that. But that's just the issue. I just make council aware of that.
Yeah.
But as I say, it's a technical issue that hasn't been brought up. And the fact that you go through the process, you invite the auditor presents, you give the public notice to the public, you put your statements on the website, you ask for submissions a week leading up to the meeting, and you've got to close that submission period a week after the meeting, keep it open.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something for council to be aware of.
Mr. Chair, we did actually, in doing the dates, consider holding a meeting in November instead of December, but then that means that it's 3 months before you meet in February.
Yeah. So, yes.
What about the 10th of December? Is that
the week before? I mean, it'd still be outside that period. So it doesn't change things. I guess I'm going to make the suggestion we keep it at 17th if we are all happy with the 17th. And that if we get the call from the audit office that I know or OLG are keen to make sure that we keep to those timelines, can we have an extraordinary online meeting with the auditor presenting online?
We could certainly discuss that with the auditors. I couldn't see any problem with that.
Okay, because that's another option. We just have an extraordinary meeting, make it online so we don't have to come together at a specific place, unless you want to. I mean, I don't mind travelling, but it might be easier. And just to deal with that one issue, so it could be, so we get the presentation.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, we actually can't hold an extraordinary meeting online. Councillors can opt to dial in, but we need to have it open for a public forum, to make it available for a public forum
should someone
wish to address the council on a matter within the business paper. So we still need to hold a meeting physically, whilst it could be that councillors could dial in.
But it wouldn't be an online meeting.
It wouldn't just be a council meeting. Yeah. So we would still have to have at least a few of us sitting here in the room. I can do that. I can be the person. And everyone else can dial in.
Pete, where is that?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I can actually come in as a member of the public gallery at that stage.
And he really had to say.
Make sure you bring your packet of jammers, so you can roll the jammers down the aisle. All right, look, so can I put that we stick with the 17th?
Yeah, so it's the third Wednesday?
Yeah, just the same. Yeah, unless we wish to change that. I guess we have an opportunity at our next meeting in October to review that.
Mr. Chair, we'll know more details by then.
By then, yeah. And we can certainly change the December date even at that point if we wish. Yeah, okay. All right, so the recommendation there is to continue to hold our ordinary meetings bi-monthly on the third Wednesday. So we now have 17th of December, which is the same. We're happy with the 29th of October, and then reading up as what's in the business papers. So I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thanks. 12.6, application for annual leave, General Manager Nav.
Aye. Definitely not.
The recommendation there is that Council approve annual leave for the period requested by the General Manager, and that the Corporate Services Manager, Lynette Safranek, be appointed as Acting General Manager with associated delegations during that time. And the two dates there, or the two periods, are the 18th of September until the 24th of September, and then next year, 9th of February to the 20th of February. Mm-hmm. So Councillor Best has moved and Councillor Parlett seconded. You wouldn't want to speak to that? No? Yes? No? General Manager, you just...
Have a good break.
Yeah. Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
All right, that's carried. Thank you. Item 12.7, Policy Review, Information Communication Technology, the ICT policy. The recommendation to Council endorse the ICT policy, place the ICT policy on public display for a period of 28 days. No substantial submissions received during the public display period, the policy be adopted, and to rescind the email and internet and mobile phone policies due to their incorporation into the new ICT policy. Can I have a mover?
Yeah.
Councillor Nash, Councillor Parlett. Thank you. The Corporate Service Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this policy has been updated to not only combine the mobile phone and email and internet policies, but ensure that council staff are aware of the use of the equipment that they're provided with, and the communications services as well. I'll take it as read, but I'm happy to provide answers to any questions.
I might just add to Mr. Chairman that this policy doesn't include AI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that our intention is to have a separate AI policy to help address that.
Mm. Yeah. Through you, Mr. Chair. So in doing the report, I was investigating how some of the other councils have included AI, and it appears that best practice is to actually keep it as a separate
item.
So we'll do that.
Sure that you're sitting there, Lynn?
Just a hologram.
It's a bit of a worry, isn't it? Yeah.
It is my nightmare at the moment with my university work.
Mm. I think the JO is working on something about that as well.
Indeed they are. Yes. Does anyone have any questions or comments to the net?
I had a read of them. I thought they were very good.
I couldn't see anything that jumped out at me. I thought that was fine.
Yeah. So a couple of things, I suppose.
Sorry,
we included that Fourier in there as well. We'd actually name them. I don't think it's necessary to name our actual provider. Because we can change providers at any time, and it's actually named in the policy.
So through the chair, the reason is an internal policy. So if it can be changed at any time.
You can have to go back and... Yes. Is there a requirement to name them, or you just say your internet, your provider?
Yeah. No, we can change it to...
Change it to managed... Yeah. ICT provider.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
good. Did think, and I can go back afterwards, but I did think some of the wording around the mobile stuff is a little bit ambiguous.
What way, Paul?
It said an employee may, the way it's written, and I understand, but I'm thinking that there might be, if you've got someone that has a little bit hard comprehension skills to understand. It said may do this, employee may do that. I'd rather bit more defined. Is it an employee must not do these particular things and stuff like that? That's all. They're only little things, but some people, if they have a comprehension issue, it's it can be a bit ambiguous.
Yeah, you want it straight out.
You want it pretty clear and straightforward.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I do remember one instance that I changed will to may in regard to disciplinary procedures, but I'll point you in the other.
There's a few there which points out what are the issues and what they should be doing. Definitely. But it's an employee may, and you look through and go, well, if you just took that in context, it could be.
Definitely need to have it. That's
for sure. So I thought I'd just make it a little bit more clearer.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. No, that's a really good. Yeah. I mean, when I read through it, I didn't see that because I was probably thinking of it in the right context. But I can see how that could be misconstrued.
Didn't notice it, but through the chair, I just thought it was very well done, actually. Mm. But definitely need to be done, and it did have a problem already with someone, apparently. So, with a staff member.
Well, if there are no further comments or questions, I don't think we need to make a formal modification of the recommendations here. Just those minor changes to be made. So I'll put the recommendation as presented there. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Thank you. Thanks, Paul, for that suggestion. They're good. 12.8, policy review, risk management policy and framework. Recommendation of Council endorsed the updated risk management policy, risk management framework and the modern slavery risk assessment plan. Damn, they're going to get my slaves. place the risk management policy, risk management framework and the modern slavery risk assessment plan on public display for a period of 28 days. And thirdly, if no substantial submissions are received during the public display period, that those named plans be adopted. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Nash and Councillor Best. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yes, this was quite a process.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't reinvent the wheel. We used quite a few best practice policies and frameworks and took time to standardise it for CTW. It is in accordance with the Australian New Zealand ISO standard.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I'm taking it as read because it's quite a lot there, mm-hmm. but happy to answer any questions or comments.
Any comments or questions?
From you, Mr. Chairman, the only thing I'd mention is for those councillors that would recall, we did do an exercise back in 2022, Council Bass will remember, on risk appetite,
mm-hmm.
And that's maybe something that we've got planned for the future too. So for the new council, we can actually probably organise a session to sort of reiterate that or basically change it or whatever. Well, that was that obviously discussion was had at the time. I'm not expecting the big major changes to it, but it may be something
different board equals potentially slightly different views. Yeah, about our appetite. No, I think it's, in fact, is it required that that sort of thing get done every time a council changes?
So not a requirement, no.
At all.
Chair. Probably could be, should be.
Yeah, probably should be, yeah. I mean, if all of these policies get, we're forced to review them in the first 12 months anyway, having a look at the risk appetite seems like a reasonable thing to do. Yeah.
I think we're pretty conservative at the time. There was much appetite, too much risk.
Well, you know,
I got mixed up with the one going to the little island, you know.
Little island with the boat.
Yeah.
I remember that too.
Yes. I said yes or no. I just said the wrong thing anyway.
We are a fairly conservative organisation, you're right. And
the other thing
for example, in the last few years, we haven't had any debts, as in bank debts or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a good indication that we are fairly conservative in our approach.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, that we plan to do as well is probably undertake some staff training as well as the council would appreciate having read those documents. They're pretty heavy going.
Mm-hmm.
And applying those principles in a practical sense,
yeah,
as to how to roll out what the procedure is and how, so the staff, so a member of staff can actually start to have that thinking like they do with workplace health and safety with their swims and so on, to actually do that assessment. And I think in a lot of cases people do that assessment, but it's probably not documented. So it's there for future reference if something, some issue arises out of it as well. So that's something that obviously we can plan and do that with the staff, because it is, I find it myself personally, a very technical area, some of that stuff, is to get the context right and then apply the principles. It's a fairly, it can be a fairly detailed sort of exercise.
So it needs a stage of translation into a easy read sort of document. It's like a template of things to think about, one pager sort of thing.
Yeah, that might be.
That green light,
Yeah, well,
that's what the chart's basically designed for.
Yeah.
Like you said, we've got no debts, but then the risk thing is that if you're, if there's something that you need and you need to borrow, well, you can. And so that sort of thing helps you work that out too. I think maybe we should have another session.
I have no problem with having another session.
We'll organise a session for the council. It's not a problem. And there will be staff training. There's no way I could just put this out to staff and expect them to sign a piece of paper so they understand, read it and understand it. It just wouldn't be possible.
It's a way of thinking. It's a way of actually thinking, going about things.
Integrating every day.
Yeah. Which is something that was trying to be instilled in staff with that Work Health and Safety Day, I remember.
That's right.
Yeah, trying to really nail down that. You know, it was funny. I woke up this morning worried about that issue I told you about the other day, which was that stain down the side wall of the in Canoundra. I was driving up through Canoundra, and I looked up at our water tank that's in town up above the office, and there was this obvious black stains down the side of it. It made it look as if it was leaking.
Yeah.
But all it is, from what we discussed it the other day, it's probably just there's a ledge around the outside which holds a bit of water, and it just leaks down on one side. So it's not, the tank's not leaking, we're assuming. We're hoping
it may be.
But
clearly,
and if you look at old photos from, Google Maps, the street view, you can see where it's been there before and it's been cleaned down. And then I started thinking, oh no, guys are going to go up there and try and clean that down. How they're going to do that? It's actually right next to where the ladder is, which is handy. But and I had this vision in my mind of them sort of leaning out from the ladder, trying to clean this thing down, and that because if someone falls, it'll be all my fault.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll blame you, Andrew.
Yeah,
So it's just that thinking, getting that thinking. Please, guys, don't do that. Do it the proper way. All right, look, thank you for that. It's a great discussion.
I probably do have a couple of little...
Just
a couple of points, I suppose. A little bit, I think we need a little bit of clarity around some of the things like the service delivery and interruptions on that, because we've got it down there as, insignificant, less than 4 hours, and then catastrophic, more than a month. Well, are we talking about a single connection point? Are we talking about the whole infrastructure? That needs to be a bit more broken down into that. Like this, if someone's out of water, is it catastrophic for us if one household's out of water for over a month? But it's pretty catastrophic if there's a whole community or a whole town or whatever. So just, I think that needs, a little bit more clarity in there. So what we're assuming is...
So the definition, of what that means.
Of what that means to us, yeah.
It's catastrophic for an individual.
But there's a couple of things like that, tables and stuff. I just thought we might need a bit more looking at more to us individually sort of thing. But, I think there's also a couple of mistakes there. Like health and safety, we've got a catastrophic as a serious breach of environmental legislation, which I don't think is what it is. That's probably only a typo, I'm just saying. Yeah, there's a couple of things in some of those charts.
Do you want to pass those on through to...
I don't want to be that person who puts my hand up and goes, miss.
This is the time to do that. No, you're welcome. You're talking to type A personnel.
But all the catastrophic thing is...
Oh, yeah, spell up.
I've been renowned for doing that in Gabon, so. So if you can, if you want to pass on those through to Lynette, then
that's right.
Just get those captured. If everyone's happy with those minor changes.
Yeah.
All right, look, any other questions, comments? Okay, no, I'll put that recommendation as noted there.
Yep.
All in favour?
Aye.
All right, that's carried. Thank you. 12.9, policy review concealed leaks. Recommendation that council endorse the updated concealed leaks policy. Place the concealed leaks policy on public display for a period of 28 days, and if no substantial submissions are received during the public display period, concealed leaks policy be adopted. Can I move it, please?
Yep.
Councillor Nash, seconder. Councillor Newstead. Thank you. Okay, so that's an updated policy.
I'll start, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and then
General Manager can take over.
Yes, General Manager will take over.
So we brought this back following some customer service requests and identification of some grey areas in the policy. And we attempted to clarify what a concealed leak actually is, and that also that the classification this is only for rural residents, because we actually don't have a classification of rural residential.
It's not for rural.
Oh, sorry, it's exactly. Not for rural.
It
doesn't apply to rural. Because we,
The overall policy doesn't apply to rural.
Or commercial. And that's, sorry.
No, you go for it now.
Mr. Chair, that was the intent of upgrading or updating the policy, was to try to articulate and define a little clearer, taking away the ambiguity piece, so that we've tried to make it very, very obvious. A, customers are responsible for the infrastructure on their property, and that's not a responsibility of CTW. If we do provide any assistance under this policy, it's not making any comment on our obligation to undertake any repairs or provide any sort of assistance. It's done on the goodwill. So that was absolutely important. We also wanted to identify that this really can only apply to residential customers. So we've done a bit more in terms of firming up what's eligible and what is ineligible to make that abundantly clear, so that, again, removes that ambiguity. We're getting a lot of people that want us to come out and have a look at their meter because they've got a high water meter reading, thinking that it's a problem with the meter. And so we're trying to set up a systematic approach where we ask the customers to undertake their own assessments of, and we'll provide them with the detail of how to do that, but undertake their own assessment of if they've got a water leak or not. If they have and they comply with this policy, we would provide them with the ability to make an application under the policy. But we would also reinforce that that's their responsibility in the first instance. So it's trying to set the systematic approach up to reinforce the customers that they have an obligation to maintain their own infrastructure. We will provide the water through the meter. Once it gets through that, that's where our responsibility passes to the property owner. So I think this articulates it reasonably well. And we welcome some feedback, because this can be a contentious issue for our customers.
And you mentioned to me the other day that you've had in recent times quite a lot of requests related to leaks or potential leaks, and it's taking up a lot of time from the staff. It's putting the onus back on the owner to do some preliminary investigation first before contacting council, rather than the first port of call being to contact council, get our guys to go out, only to find that there is a leak and it's on the other side of the boundary, you know.
They should know that, really.
I think the idea here is to make that really
clear. Yeah, yeah, and I think that's good, but you could add in there that any water lost before the meter is, you know, the customers, you could put something in there like that.
That's the overarching topic. Mm. Yep, we can have the ability to pay or to charge our staff rates out, though, for coming out. Checking meters, we've got a thing to charge the meter, lots of things.
In the fees and charges, there are possibilities to test a meter.
Mm.
There's also private works that we could charge. It's quite difficult because the customer rings up through the office and they say, I've just got this whole water bill. There must be something wrong with my meter.
Mm.
So our first point now is to say to our operators, can you go and check the meter, please?
Yeah, but you've got to do that.
And it's really hard for the operators to have to discuss that with the owner to say, actually, the meter's okay. Mm. But we're starting to train and educate our operators to do that.
Mm.
So just recently we had one where operator, we got a call. We've obviously got a problem with our meter. And this particular property owner knows someone in Forbes that works on the water board and knows everything about meters and told him that your meter's faulty. So he's contacted us. Our staff have gone out there and through that stepped process, able to identify to the property owner, there's actually water going through your meter. You have a leak on your property. And they still weren't prepared to accept that.
Mm.
And so what we've said to the operator is, okay, have a chat to them. They've got a provision under our fees and charges that we can remove the meter, send it away to an independent lab to be tested, and it cost them $390. When that was mentioned to them, they said, oh, don't worry about it. So it's gone from, you've got a problem with your meter, obviously, because it's reading incorrectly, to, oh yes, we probably have got a leak and we'll deal with it, thank you very much.
Mm.
And it's really, we're putting that responsibility on our operators to have those difficult discussions.
Mm.
We've got other issues where a property owner has gone away for several months, come back, high water, and he's turned off the tap at the meter, which they don't always work, and expecting that infrastructure is going to protect their infrastructure. Well, that tap's ours. It's for us to service the water meter. It's not to isolate your infrastructure. It's real is.
So what happened? Did they have a hard water bill?
Because they got a leak. And they went away and they didn't fix their leak and they just expected that council's tap was going to just turn it off.
But it doesn't.
Well, there's no.
Most people used to turn their taps off before they went away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're trying to, when we put a new service in, we put a bore valve, another valve downstream of the meter, just on the customer's side. But all the old existing systems don't have that. But if the customer wants to isolate their infrastructure, their pipe network, they need to install their own isolation valve and not use ours.
Well, the cost of the test equipment for the meter would be, because realistically you're only a volume over time. It's not a difficult thing to test, it's how much volume goes through that over a particular thing. You could say, well, okay, the fee is, we'll come in and have a look straight away. If the meter's found faulty, we reimburse you that fee. If we don't, you pay that fee straight up. But if you could do the testing in-house instead of sending it away.
We can test in-house, and it's a manual process. We don't have certified instrumentation.
Mm.
So it then opens us up to, you know, to be tested to say, how do you prove that was right?
If you've got a certified flow meter, you can compare it against a certified flow meter. It wouldn't be being expensive to buy a certified flow meter that does, you know, that says, oh, this is what it is, and if it matches up with your reading.
Mm.
Well, I mean, the only problem I see is that the real issue is to try and reduce the amount of time that the operators are spending on site dealing with an issue which is actually not caused by CTW.
If they're told they're billed out, instead of they're told they're billed out straight away, we'll come and have a look at it. This is the cost. If we're found to be the issue, we wipe that cost straight away and we do the repair for you. But if not, that's the fee you pay.
So there needs to be that break, and there has to be some sense of responsibility being thrown back onto the customer to do the due diligence first. Now, I might need a bit of comms around this too. You've written that down here.
We have an old leaflet, I suppose, about how to assess for leaks. So we're going to update that, and there's information on the smart advice on the water conservation website about that as well. So we'll start to put comms out to our customers. And then when we get that in place, like you say, when the customer is up, the first step you need to take customer is go through this process.
Yes.
Go and test that your water meter is accurate.
How could you test that?
Well, test that there's no leaks on their side.
Essentially, you turn the valve off, which meter stops.
The meter stops, you're
right. Open valve, meter keeps going.
So you've now got a leak. Oh, right. Yeah, that's easy then.
But you've got to have all your water turned off in your premises.
Turn everything off.
Make sure your toilet systems are full.
That's a critical step.
Yeah, you turn everything off. And then if there's still water,
you've got that very small incremental movement of the little wheel.
So we'll have that process, step-by-step process that the layperson can go through that will help them to determine that there is water passing through the meter. So that will be step one for the customer. If they still feel that's a problem or they can't determine, then they can come back to us for step two, is it we can come out and yes, we could probably put another policy together and say, this is how we're going to approach that type of circumstance. Apply a fee subject to. So that might be another incentive for the customer to go to the
first.
It might be worth mentioning in the comms too that, you know, particularly winter time is a time when these sort of leaks can occur because of, you know, frost, particularly in an area like this, which is very cold. People might feel a little bit reticent to even mention the fact that they've got a leak because they, you know, they think that that's a bit embarrassing or whatever. I don't know. It's a common enough occurrence and it's impacting on staff. So yeah, I think this is
some get pretty good. We got one in Grenfell where the water's actually going out of the caravan park. We found it's going underneath a slab into the sewage main. How do you pick that?
Yeah.
And it was only that the staff actually opened a sewage main to look in there and went, hang on a minute, there's fresh water running into this. That's really difficult to find today. So.
I'm personally on a water line that comes from Orange Council, would you believe? And it goes through a neighbour's property and they've got a T intersection coming off that line into their place. And for years we were trying to work out why is there, you know, there must be a leak somewhere on the It wasn't until we had this major drought where all the dams were getting out. They've got quite a large lake and it was down to almost nothing. And the water line actually went underneath the lake and up the other side, but there was water pouring out of the water line into the lake. So we couldn't find it for years and years and years. We couldn't find this leak, but it was actually water was bubbling up and straight up into his lake. So,
He was lucky.
What's that? But the only thing I've got is, well, with this, we've actually removed the ability for anyone, for instance, like a, any of the churches or any of the non-for-profits, have we? Because it's only a non-for-profit residential. So if you get someone like St. Vincent de Paul that had a leak in their building or the Bible, you know, the sale in town or something like that, some of those non-for-profits, or we've completely removed them out of their ability to claim any leak with this one.
We could add that back into the eligibility to make non-for-profits potentially, and they have to demonstrate that, obviously.
I should put out, Mr. Chairman, that's been in there for some time, though, that the not-for-profit's only for the residential.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, so it's been in there. That's not something that got changed with this.
I thought by removing that, Not, there's a section here. I thought we removed all of it. Because, I mean, we've had, I know in town we've had the, like, the scouts.
Yeah.
They've applied for a water leak in town. In
the, we've had lots, yeah.
Non-residential, and we've always allowed that to a degree.
But they would approach you, would they? Send a letter in or whatever.
But this policy doesn't leave that.
No, this policy would.
There's no ability for the general manager to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. So this policy makes any commercial, industrial property, which, like a scout or I guess a church,
yeah, that's the idea.
Or someone of that nature, wouldn't. This policy doesn't enable that.
Well, do we want to make that change?
General manager.
I think that's probably something that requires an amendment.
You know, you've got the Salvation Army or something like that, but I mean, non-profit.
Yeah.
We just have to be, through Mr. Chairman, just have to be clear on what categorisation and what we're saying, how we define that.
Yeah.
Because if you put a comment in there, it could be possibly exploited by other organisations.
Mm.
I think they'd get in touch with you anyway, wouldn't they?
Well, can I ask, if we just leave it as is, it goes out on public display for a period of 28 days. In that period of 28 days, we'll wait and see whether or not there's any non-for-profits who might make a comment. Probably won't. But also give us time to have a think about.
Do not for characterising to have some sort of.
They should classify it.
Can you say there's already something in there?
To be a non.
Maybe incorporate that wording that the non for profit has to be registered with the ATO as a.
Hang on, you're talking about registered charities here.
It could be anything.
If you. Possibly. But I just would add, there's always the opportunity, this policy aside, for council to consider a Section 356 donation to those charities if they felt that they needed to do so. If there was a significant loss, and they wrote in, we could actually say. That would be a possibility.
I vaguely remember we have something like that.
But as an organisation, if you're sitting there and like they're working in the Christian bookshop, for instance, they're going, oh my God, my water leak, you're only going to have someone look through that. If they look through that policy, they're going to go, oh, we're not eligible for this. They're not going to go, oh, hang on a minute, let's write a letter to them. They're just going to go, oh, we can't do it. That was all. I'm just, I think.
We've had a fair few, don't we, with the.
Well, Savinia Paul's or one of those sort of community organisations.
And the question then, Councillor Vest, is whether that bookshop would be a registered charity. Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Probably not. If it's a bookshop, it's a shop, it's a business, presumably.
Be a commercial business.
Yeah, potentially. It's a grey area. This is where we get this grey area.
We have had them, we have dealt with them, so I just.
So through you, Mr. Chair, so we talk about in the Not-for-Profit Organisations Association, we actually only talk about the not-for-profit in there, not the other associations. So is that is that the area that you're looking at?
I'm just thinking what we could do is, we've got 28 days, if we put this out as is, we've got 28 days in which to come up with some definitions. That we're all happy with and are pretty.
You can't change.
I'm sure historically we've dealt with it. I just can't. We've dealt with it. Like I said, the Grenfell Scouts is a good example. They had a leaking one and they did it and they applied through council. And by this, it's straight out that they're it is important to note that only residential connections operated by not.
We can have a look at the wording in other councils.
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, maybe what I'll do is I'll go to and refer to the other county councils, water county councils, and have a look what their wording is.
Because through the chair, isn't it? Once we put it out, we can't change it.
Oh no, it goes out for 28 days
We're putting that out.
We're putting that out for 28 days.
If we change it,
you bring it back.
And we could change it so that for item three there, if no substantial submissions are received, it's be adopted. So we're effectively adopting it based on that qualification, but we could change that to say that it'd be brought back to the next meeting.
Through you, Mr. Chair, for adoption. This is a, this policy is actually an internal policy. So we can actually amend this policy at any time. We've chosen to send it out for public comment because it does impact, I guess, directly on particular...
The public. That's generally, it's been, for you, Mr. Chair, it's generally been treated as an external policy because it impacts the public, the consumers. So it hasn't been treated historically as an internal policy. It's been treated as a policy that's to deal with an interaction with our consumers.
Yeah.
So it's always been put out there.
Mr. Chair, I will review it while it's on public exhibition and if necessary, bring it back.
I'd say that because we have the ability to refuse anyway, we can refuse every application. There's nothing that says we can't refuse.
Yes.
So if it was a non-for-profit that we didn't think was a non-for-profit, we have completely have the rights as a council to refuse.
For you, Mr. Chairman, Councillor Best, how it becomes sort of difficult is it, would you ask for a copy of their charter or their constitution to see exactly do they qualify or do they don't? It becomes a very difficult area, and we're tending to get cases that don't necessarily fit the picture. And you get some very difficult ones to assess. You try to make the policy as
clear,
black and white as you can, but there are shades of grey that we need to deal with, and we need to make, we're sometimes called upon to make a decision on. And that's, they're the ones that take up considerable amount of internal time too for assessment and consideration.
And to draw a comparison to other utilities, if this was as an electrical, if you left your lights on, you can't go back to your retailer and say, oh, I left my lights on, can you give me a deduction? You can make a hardship application and make payment schedules. So this is a bit unique in that sense. And it's, as I said, we don't have to provide this level of support to our customer base, but we, as an organisation, we've made a choice to do so. But we do need, if we're going to provide this level of support, it needs to be very clear about when we will accept it and when we won't. And that's why we've had to update this to make get rid of that ambiguity, because it was a bit grey. But I think in this case, where it currently addresses not-for-profits, it's again going back to just the residential, not-for-profits.
Correct.
So that's the definition or how we've delineated, I suppose, how we're going to address the not-for-profits. I would suggest that we could continue down this road, and if there's an organisation that wishes to make their own individual case, we'd have to then bring that to council.
That's right.
It's always been the case.
Through this chair too, in here we've got approval for rebate. Is at the discretion of the general manager and will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. So I think we've got that flexibility. And I think that's really well worded there, because you can bring it back and then come back to council.
That's where I was getting to.
So I think we're covered quite well there. So for now, I'm happy with the wording.
Well, just so we can move on, I think great discussion, everyone. This, I think what I might do is modify item three there. Instead of it be adopted if there is no substantial submissions, we just say that to be brought back to the next council meeting for adoption. So it becomes an item at the next council meeting for adoption. So we'll vote on it then. So,
irrespective of submissions, is that what you're saying?
So if there are no substantive submissions, we still vote to adopt it at that point as a separate thing. But in the meantime, if staff could have a look at the definitions around not-for-profit have a look at the what other county councils do, and come up with some wording there that we can then look at.
Well, through the chair, I think we're sort of getting away from it. Like Jen said, it's already in there that if everything's in, at the discretion of the general manager, and you can come and you can get hardship and whatever. I just think this is just a concealed leak policy. I think that it's plain and visible, and now that's it's fine. I'm with Jen. Quite happy with it.
It's up, no, look,
I want more work. I'm just worried that there's a lot of work gone into this, and research you've done. I appreciate the work you've done. And we can always amend it if we sort of find that in one of the other county councils there's something that, or given if we have a situation arise.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman, the important thing is we have consistency in our application, and we have credibility when we make a determination. And we can stand behind that determination. And I think that's why we need a fair bit of clarity within policy, which I think we've got. But sometimes you do get those difficult or unique situations. There's one recent one, I just mentioned briefly, a question of principle, where there's a residential property on which a commercial business has been conducted. Now, the classification is residential, so you look at it from the point of view, well, it certainly comes into the ambit of the policy. But then there is a, you know, definitely a commercial business being conducted at those premises. But just what I'm saying is you get these areas which do complicate the assessment.
It's too complicated to cover in a policy.
I guess say if it was a lawyer's rooms or something like that, where in a residential building, but it's the lawyer working in from their front office sort of thing. Yeah, that sort of idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So in that instance, I guess where you could have the threshold where you have the is if the business requires more water, as in the type of business. I don't know. I mean, where do you draw the line?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm saying is...
like if they had a shed out the back, which they were running a workshop where they will need more water, it's a bit different to, say, a lawyer's office.
I'm just using that for illustration.
It's a really good example. Where you draw the line.
We have no policy, and we don't accept.
Yeah, the only point I'd make on that, Mr. Chairman, is that most water utilities, even Sydney Water, have policies for concealed leaks.
Yes.
It's quite common. Most water utilities do have it. Yeah. It is at the absolute discretion of the water utility, quite clearly.
Yeah.
But most water utilities have it, and they have their own form of wording and eligibility around it.
Yeah. No, look, it's a goodwill thing, and I wouldn't want to change that. I think we should still have some rebates
All my point is that you get something like the food hall that's run by volunteers, a small group of volunteers giving up a lot of time to do something. They have an issue, they look at our this policy and go, oh, we can't do anything about it. That's what I just look at and I think from that point of view. I'd like to be able to say to them, well, actually there are avenues for you if they look at the policy. You know, they're volunteers. Most of those charity organisations are just mum and pups that are just helping out, and they're doing their best. But
so that's not covered anywhere in the policy then?
Well, it's very clear that it says it's only residential. It's completely, it just says it's only by non-for-profits for residential purposes. Right. So that's all. I just think there's, if I was reading it in their situation, they're not going to say, oh, I'll write them a letter, I'll do this, I'll do that. I'll go, oh, well, we can't get anything out of it.
You've been involved in an actual thing, haven't you?
We all have. With all different organisations.
But it comes back to the council to vote, doesn't it? So,
I guess we've now got to make a decision. Do we defer this one to the next meeting, council meeting? Or do we put it out, put the current, what you've currently done, out on display for community, knowing the fact that we may make a modification in a couple of months' time.
It's only a slight wording.
It's only a slight wording, Mr. Chair. I think that you'd be, if it's If it's only a minor amendment, then we'll be able to adopt it at the next meeting. If not, we'll have just place it back out on 28 days, and if there are any submissions, it will be adopted with that.
Does that sound good to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, so minor change there, so to bring back the policy at the next council meeting for adoption. So we'll have an opportunity at that point to see if there's any minor changes to be made, and we will vote on adoption at that point. Okay, so that's that. It's all up on the screen there.
I don't know the person tells the church they can't.
So we're doing the update. Do you? So the mover and seconder, are you happy with the change, that slight change that's there?
You happy, John?
So who is?
I'm happy.
Yeah.
You're happy with those changes?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll put all of that as change there. Is that so? All in favour?
Aye.
It's carried. Thank you. Great discussion. I like it. okay. 12.10 policy review. The rural water supply policy. Recommendation to council and endorse the updated rural water supply policy. Place the rural water supply policy on public display for 28 days, and if no substantial submissions are received during the public display period, rural water supply policy be adopted. Lynette, are you going to talk to that? Mover. Paul's moving and seconded by Councillor Newstead. So Councillor Best, Councillor Newstead. Sorry. Getting ahead of myself.
Mr. Chair, there were no changes in this policy. It was purely a review just to ensure that the policy was reviewed.
Yes, within the 12-month period. Any questions, comments, changes, anything that everyone wants? Everyone happy with that policy?
Yeah.
No comments? Okay, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. 12.11, corporate services updates. Recommendation that council note the corporate services update reports. Could I have a mover, please? Councillor Hallett, seconded. Councillor Nash. Corporate services manager.
So through you, Mr. Chair, it's been a busy couple of months. A lot of training, essential WHS training has been undertaken. As you can see from the report, we've done the asbestos awareness, the liquefied chlorine gas safe use training has been undertaken, the upgrades or the reviews of the safe working methods statements are coming to completion in the next month, but that work has been continuing. The technical and operating staff went through a spirometry testing program, and that gives us a level of where everyone sits at the moment. And so that was there. The WHS. We're working through the state cover self audit review audit and action plan at the moment. So that's underway at this current time. Look, the staff training continues. We have chemical training coming up in September, and we're looking at 13 of our staff, it'll actually be 14 staff now, will be participating in the Cert for Water Operations, which commences in September as well. Been pretty busy with recruitment, and pleased to say that we have a second trainee who will commence with us on Monday. He will start at the water treatment plant in Blaney, or with the water guys in Blaney. And we also have a new executive management accountant commencing on Monday as well, Claire Wright from Orange. We did put out the executive manager operations and technical services, the EMOTS position. We weren't successful in obtaining a successful applicant. However, through that process, we were able to recruit a 12-month placement project manager who is actually helping to keep the wheels turning on some of the projects and moving that forward. He has a lot of experience in project management and water, so he's commenced and is progressing well. But we're looking at putting that position back out this week. We're hoping to have that back out by Friday. And the engineering coordinator position has closed. We actually sat down and went through a multitude of applications of varying capacity and abilities. We have come down to quite a few that we'll do screening calls with, so hopefully next week we'll have some interviews with some of those people. And the technical officer role is still open and for the next couple of weeks, so we'll look at that shortly. But we have started to have some applications come through to that, and we had a quick look at them yesterday, and there is a couple there that we're looking at screening as well at this point in time. We also, since last meeting, have appointed a new network operator in Blaney. So Max commenced with us on the 14th of July, and he's been working around the Blaney area and appears to be going very well. So that's good. And I think apart from that, governance is ongoing. Lots of conversations. I went to the local government conference last week and had lots of conversations about governance and recruitment and bits and pieces. So we're just sort of seeing how we can incorporate some of that into the day-to-day work. As I mentioned earlier, the AI, Burwood actually did quite an extensive, Burwood Council did quite an extensive process with AI and best practices, and the JO is looking at some of how we can incorporate some of those best practices into the rural councils. So we're looking at that moving forward.
And through the chair, I'm pleased to see that you went to that forum, because you would have learned a lot. Mm. You always learn from these things, and you've just got to go.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Learning and networking.
Yeah.
Really good opportunities.
And you're getting ideas from other councils.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Pleased to see that you went there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I saw that there were job losses coming from the state government in the water area, I was jumping for joy. Yeah. And I was thinking of ringing Charlie and saying, look, there's a pool of people who might be wanting to
work. We did talk about that yesterday when we were reviewing the applications and talking about putting the EMOTs back out. And, who could we network with to get in touch with those? Mm. And we have had some discussions with some employees in a couple of those state government departments. And The timing is not quite right, so they're not. Yeah, there's still some negotiations to go before people start losing jobs and things. So
yeah,
we'll just see how we go. But yeah, we'll definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
And through Mr. Jagger, can I make a comment on traineeships? Which we've got one young fella, Charles, who's operating out of the Canana depot. He's proven to be quite good. You can appreciate these guys are green as, but the new fellow we got came actually out of the Blaney High School I just approach went to the school through the careers coordinator and addressed about 9 kids who are looking to get out of the school. But it's good that we've got opportunity in the government of funding these positions to bring people into the water sector. And it's a real good opportunity for us to take these young kids, particularly the guy, James from Blaney, he's 15, and he just doesn't want to be at school, but he's got some good hands-on approach. So it's taking the opportunity that the government's given us, I think, is really fantastic, and we're hopeful that these two trainees will stick around with us for a long time to come, and we can provide them with opportunities.
Mm. It's really good. Just by going to the school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just went on to school and talked to the careers, talked to a bunch of kids. And
yeah.
One of
that's
them
what you've got to do, I think, yeah.
And I think we had advertised a couple of times unsuccessfully, and we were down to the 11th hour. I think it was the Wednesday I went to the school,
yep,
and the Friday the things closed. It's like, We had to get some real, get skates on, but these kids were keen to get out of school.
Well, some of them just, school's not for everyone, is it?
No. It is worth noting that James, who's about to start with us, he's already been applying for other trainings. So it's not as though he just made the decision on the day.
No.
He was ready to actually make that move, and this opportunity just came on platter to him.
Both. Supported by his parents. That was one of the key things we met. Well, we talked directly to their parents.
Yep.
Because we know they don't get paid a lot of money, can I say.
No.
The parents certainly need to support them in their transition to their working career.
Mm.
It's really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
Mm.
Are there any other questions, comments?
No.
The recommendation is just to note the report. Thank you so much for that, and Chuck. Really good, positive movement there, particularly on staff recruitment and training. It's good. Still for some challenges, but you know, it's moving forward, which is excellent. So I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. Moving on. Audit Risk and Improvement Committee. This is item 12.12. Recommendation that Council note the Audit Risk and Improvement Committee minutes for the meetings held on 22nd May and 14th of August. Can I have a mover? Councillor Parlett, seconded by
John.
Councillor Newstead.
Yeah.
Thank you. Corporate Services Manager, does anyone, or do you want to speak to this at all?
Look, Mr Chair, it is as presented. It is worth noting that we have been making good progress on the forward health risk assessment and project management audit recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So substantially we're in the 80% completion rate, so that's worth noting, but otherwise it's just as read.
I've actually got a question related to the very last dot point, and that is, when are you finishing up?
For you, Mr. Chairman, I'll finish up on Friday the 31st
of
October.
After our next meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I just wanted to make sure that we captured that in a meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That was all. Any further comments, questions?
Sorry, Trish Chair. Nash. Update on ATO ruling in relation to superannuation payments. How did that go?
Through the Chair, Councillor Nash, I know you have a passionate interest in this subject matter because it was subject to considerable debate at ARIC. The status of the request for the ruling went in September last year. The ATO has not yet produced a response. They did ask for further information around February, which they were given from the participating councils. They were given that information. I think it just sort of indicates some of the complexity around some of these matters related to superannuation for ARIC members and the implications, not only for ARIC, but certainly for any sort of tribunal that would have an independent member or a planning panel. It goes to the heart of the question. The OLG just basically said in their guidelines you will pay superannuation to ARIC members without doing any research or understanding the complexities of the situation.
Mm.
A number of ARIC members, although an ARIC member is required to be a specific natural person, they do actually request payment to a company or a partnership or something as well. So effectively you can't contribute to your employment if you wanted to.
No.
So there's still these issues of uncertainty around there. So basically we've taken a view, we're quite happy to pay it if that's the determination. And it's never been about the actual amount involved or the cost. It's basically if that's a requirement and we're required to pay it, we will pay it.
Mm-hmm.
The issue around the ruling will be as to when they say you have to commence that payment given that the legislation came in 1992, the superannuation guarantee legislation. Hopefully there'd be a practical answer to that, which wouldn't go back, I wouldn't think, beyond 5 years or something.
That's a lot of grandfathering.
Well, we've had an audit commission since 2011, so we'd go back to 2011. Which would be an administratively very difficult process to do. But yeah, it's ongoing, Councillor Nash. But
Thank you. Still no clarification.
Okay. Not a final decision at this stage, no.
Any further questions, comments? Okay, I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
All right, it's carried. Thank you. Item 12.13, disclosures by councillors and designated persons. I think we'll be doing this. Recommendation of the disclosures by councillors and designated persons returns for the period ending 30th of June 2025 be tabled, as tabled, be received. Mover, Councillor Best, Councillor Newstead. I think everyone's put theirs in, is that right?
I've put mine in. Mr. Chairman, yes. We've we had one we were chasing, which Michelle's indicated that we've received, so we do have everyone from all the councillors now, from all the independent members of the ARIC and from the senior staff. They're all available to be reviewed at this meeting. They're tabled there. They will be then, after this meeting, be put on the website and redacted in terms of signatures and personal residences and so on. So that's required under the GIPA guidelines to do that. That will be done after this meeting. So this is just basically they're required to be tabled within 3 months of the end of the financial year, and that's basically what we're doing with this report.
Any queries? No, I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Aye. That's carried. 12.14, Financial Matters Investment Report as at 31st of July 2025. Recommendation of the information in relation to cash investments at 31st of July 2025 be noted. Mover, Councillor Pallette. Seconder, Councillor Nash. Director of Finance and Corporate Services, would you like to speak to this?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, this is the latest investment report that we have available. From the broad economic point of view and what impacts the interest rates, we've basically had the inflation rate coming down to 2.1%, so it's been pretty good. And the employment as unemployment's increased to 4.3%, so that was two big amounts of information that become available to the RBA. The RBA made the decision in July, which went against most commentators, not to cut the rate, but they've subsequently done at the August meeting. There is an expectation that probably be some further cuts before the end of the year. There is some debate amongst the commentators as to the extent of those cuts. Some people feel that because interest rates in Australia didn't go to the levels of certainly in the US when they went to over 5% and some European countries, that the rates won't be substantial cuts to come, but there may be two or three in the next 12 months, but that'll possibly could be the end of the cycle. So it'll be a very short range within the interest rate cycle. We certainly won't see rates back at 0.1% or anything at that level. The RBA's got a new governance structure, so they have a new arrangement now as to how they make these decisions, and they're obviously quite a bit cautious. They don't want to come down too quickly because they didn't want to caught out because they kept interest rates too low for too long previously, about 2 or 3 years ago, and that's what contributed a lot to the inflation that we had. In terms of the markets, most of the banking institutions are factoring in a couple more drops before the end of the year. So basically, when we go to renew a 12-month term deposit, we're generally looking at 1% to 1.5% lower. That's certainly occurring. So it's a little bit more difficult. Sometimes we back off the curve a bit and come into maybe 6 months. On one occasion, we took a 3-month term deposit when the rates are quite attractive. We take advantage of that. Obviously, with interest rates falling, you want to try and lock it in for the 12 months to give you that security of income in your future. And our policy is pretty flexible. We've got a pretty flexible policy with it's very low risk, and we're able to sort of work through it and achieve still pretty good returns on some of those deposits that we have. So overall, we're travelling well. Even though interest rates are falling, we should when we did the budget for 25-26, we factored in a reduction in interest rates. So we're on target, certainly for 25-26, to achieve the budget. But certainly, as the deposits mature, we sort of look at what opportunities are out there. And sometimes institutions, AMP is an example recently where they had some offers at 4.3%. Unfortunately, we weren't in a position to do much with it at the time, but some institutions put those offers out there. Sometimes they close very quickly to those windows, those doors, I mean. So you've got to act pretty quick. So it depends if we just happen to get a situation where people are looking for money when we've got some money maturing and coming available, we certainly take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. We've got over $12 million in cash and investments at the moment. That reflects the fact that, and we're dealing with the rebates in a later report. We deferred a number of capital programs and so forth, and we've got some carryovers, so that's certainly can contribute to that. So our funds invested are probably higher than normal average. So that's contributed to the fact that we've got pretty good interest return as well. Certainly for 24-25, we got quite a good return over the course of the year. But generally, I think it's going on pretty well. It's very low risk, our portfolio. And I think this comes to the risk appetite question,
yes.
Mr. Chairman. I think council's comfortable with the way we do it. They're comfortable with the policy. So I think it's going on quite nicely.
Thank you very much. Any questions to Peter? No questions? Okay. I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. 12.15, uncompleted works, the rebates, as you just mentioned. So, yes. Recommendation that council rebate the uncompleted works and adjustments to made to the adopted 25-26 operational plan.
Yeah, for you, Mr. Chairman, this is the annual
mover.
Oh, sorry, we better get a mover.
Yeah, mover, Councillor Nash, seconder, Councillor Best.
Yep.
Thanks.
No worries, thank you. This is the rebates. When we're finishing the accounts for 24-25, we reviewed those projects that were in progress or hadn't commenced, and these have been discussed with the senior staff and operational team as well. And this is the list of works that were proposed to do there. You will note we earlier spoke about your Yugara booster pump, so that's the one that's to do with the disaster funding. So that's actually on the list there for completion. So we've got a list there. A number of them have been started, some haven't, but a number of them have been started. The other one we do have this year is the general manager spoke about the planning grant for the streeting planning grant, where there was stage one and stage two. Yeah. We haven't completed stage one at this stage, so there's actually a carryover there for stage one, which is an operational grant. That's quite unusual. We generally don't rebate operational funds as a general principle, and most councils have the same approach. But this is a grant, so we need to match the funds. So we've got $37,000 to be spent. That's a 50-50 arrangement. So that's planned to be finished as well. The effect of voting these works is that the capital budget increases from 1.9 million to 3.1. They'll become part at the September budget review. They will become part of the adopted budget, and the operational votes will change by the operational result will change by 50% of the 37,118, which is the council share of the funding. So the deficit will increase. The projected deficit will increase from 710,000 to 729,000. So that's basically there for council's consideration, but I'm happy to take questions, and the general manager can also elaborate on any of the projects if anyone's got any issues there.
These are all projects that we've previously agreed on?
Yes.
Yeah, because we're just rebating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a couple of questions with the general manager the other day, but he... Nothing I need to talk about now. Are there any questions or queries about that? No, nothing? Okay. No. Look, thank you, Beata. That's great. So, look, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. 12.16, financial statement certificates. The recommend. Oh, here we go. It's a long list. Okay. Here we go.
This is not in confidential, Mr. Chairman. You have to read the whole resolution. It's not there. It's there for people to see.
Yeah, it is there for people to see. So I'm not going to read through all of that long list. People listening in can read the business papers. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Newstead and Councillor Parlett. Director of Finance and Corporate Services, would you like to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll speak to this one. This is our annual financial statement certificates, or statement by council and management. I have the certificate here, which will be signed.
Need to be signed by myself and Councillor Newstead?
Yes, I'll just speak to that matter, Mr. Chairman. Historically, it's been the chairman and the deputy chair who have signed the certificates. But when I became aware that Councillor Goswich was unavailable, I was made aware of that. I approached Councillor Newstead, and he kindly said he's happy to sign the certificates on behalf of council. So we proceed down that path. We've got our auditors coming next week. They come in to do their final audit. They'll also be at Blaney Council as well with a different team, but they'll be part of the Intendus team, so they'll be working pretty much in Blaney during that period. So we get the final audit underway. We have draft financial statements too, which I forwarded to the council. And I've got a set here if anyone wants to read them. It's not really, I won't go too much into the result because they're draft at this stage, but it's there for everyone to see. And the other thing that we've got there is the internal restrictions in C13. That's just there for council to confirm that our internal restrictions are in accordance with what they understand. If there's any questions on that, I'm happy to take any questions on that one, as well, that aspect as well, but that's there for council to adopt those internal restrictions as well. The other issue is for council to, and this is a procedural thing, to delegate to the general manager authority to issue the financial statements upon receipt of the auditor's reports. So once we get the auditor's reports, we can get everything together and get them off to the OLG straight away. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that function can't be undertaken by staff. It can't be delegated. It's got to be delegated to the general manager because it's a responsibility of council under section 377 of the Act. So that's basically where we're up to. But I'm happy to take any questions, or anyone's got any questions on the statements, the drafts.
Any questions, comments? Councillor Best.
With your internal allocation, what goes into the development reserve? That's just the developer's contribution?
It's a very good question, Councillor Best. That's a reserve that's been there, I think, historically for quite a few years. We haven't been transferring anything into that reserve over the last 7 years since I've been here. Basically, I think the intention was with that is if there was a major development or a major expansion, which involved a major expansion of the water network, council could offer support to the developer by way of assistance with Section 64, or council could agree to undertake some of the additional infrastructure works and fund it from that restriction. So that basically has been retained there. So it's actually a form of infrastructure restriction, if you like. That may be something that council wants to look at some stage. I have spoken to the general manager about at some stage maybe getting a restriction policy to council, which outlines each of those restrictions to see the purpose of them, and that's something that council could consider. But that was the purpose that was set up, and I think it goes back a considerable period of time.
Mm. Well, I think then if that's the case, what you've suggested is a great idea, is to have a document which outlines all of the restrictions and why they exist. Just doesn't have to be lengthy, just something that so we all know and understand what those are. And if it's been a while, since that restriction was activated, really. It's certainly worth reviewing.
Yeah, I just thought it was, you know, extensions and stuff that was in some ways unfunded due to, if you put that development contribution into that and then reuse that to...
No, the developer contributions, the unspent developer developer contributions received have generally been applied against new works that were done in a given year. For the 24-25 year, the developer contributions exceed new works that we've done, so we've actually got an external restriction in the in the financial statements for for that as well, and that's an external restriction, so it can only be used for new works. Mm-hmm. But the developer assistance restriction has been there for many years, and it was there to assist major development or attract attract development to the area where council they assure that it can has the capacity or needs to get additional capacity to undertake the supply.
Any further questions or comments?
No.
That's a lot of work gone into that. Yeah. Thank you. I was going through the documents yesterday, the lengthy documents. I was totting them up. Every single one, of course. Yeah. Animal email one again. But I noted that it was a little bit better. The bottom line was a little bit better than expected for reasons that you've identified, which is good. But still some challenges ahead. And I think that's fine. I'm happy to sign those documents. Any further comments? No? I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Thank you. And by the end of today, we will sign those documents. Yes, we'll sign them remotely, over lunch perhaps. Okay, 1217 operations and project updates. Council note the update on the various projects currently underway. I've already flagged a few of them, but do I have a mover? Councillor Newstead, seconded by Councillor Nash.
Yeah.
General Manager, you want to quickly touch on all of those?
We
sort of touched on a few of them before, but...
Happy to do that, or if there's specific questions that the councillors may have, please raise them. I probably won't talk to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're trying to work through, and I'd like to work with councillors on, that first section there, the customer service, I'd like to be able to report on items that the councillors may wish to see. I've put a few comments in there. You might recall back in the past we used to have probably 4 or 5 pages of different reports on different villages and things, which were probably not the best way to present, but so interested just maybe to hear what the councillors might want to see that could give them an indication of how the business may be tracking or any concerns that might be popping up. I've noted there the customer service requests. We talked earlier about those. You'll see there 73 of those over the 2 months was related to water meters. So it's certainly a high percentage of the calls that come through. And there were the two, what is defined as a complaint when they come in. So someone makes a calls the customer service team. If it meets a certain criteria, it comes out as a complaint. So we report on that. Usually it's either water quality or it's a network issue, and it's around our levels of service. And you'll see those two complaints that came in. Obviously, we undertake an investigation of those as they come in, and we're able to identify that those issues weren't a CTW matter that we had to address. It was related to the customer's internal systems, so that's good. But if there's something else that you feel that you'd like to see in the reports, if you feed that back to me at any point in time, and then we can look at how we can report on that. So happy to take that feedback. at any time. I'll just see if Councillor Best wants to...
I'd only like to be live reported on the stuff that creates when the water's shut down for... So we should put a knowledge of when it's been closed down. For instance, if you've got main breaks that have shut down Caneandra or something for a period of time, it's important the council's aware of that in case we get...
Well, this is for the board reports, really.
We are trying to... We're doing... I don't know if you follow our Facebook page.
Oh, I get your Facebook page. I said you get it through that, not through other things.
Yeah, so this... Yeah, just referring to the council business papers and what you want to see there. So those interruptions to customers, we certainly try and make sure we capture that through our social medias. And there's times when the guys might go and knock on doors if it's only a few people that are impacted. There's a difference there, I think, in how we report on that. Talks about the main breaks there, but not necessarily, we don't go into the detail here of where it was broken, how long was it the service out of action for, or any detail of that nature.
I always appreciated the previous reports broken down by location. Didn't have to be the full, spreadsheet of, which is what we got before, just the long list of how many breaks there were at it. Whether there's any significant event is probably a better thing, or so any of those sort of things, because that's effectively what I was doing by scanning through all of those numbers, was really to see whether or not there was something out of the ordinary popping up. They could just be reported as an out of the ordinary thing. I certainly appreciated seeing information about the dam, for example, like problems, it's left the level that's sitting at the moment, that sort of thing, which is, again, something that we can... Do we put any of that data online?
We do. It's on the website.
It's on the website, okay. So, again, that's probably something that doesn't necessarily need to come to the board. I mean, I found it useful or interesting, just to gauge where our levels are at any particular time.
Yeah, I don't know. That report's all right for me, I think.
So really just asking whether or not that we need the detailed report that we had in the past, whether that can be brought down to something that's more specific.
And maybe, like you mentioned, the locations.
The locations are useful because, someone will say, I heard there was a break in the line over Manelda or something, and I found out, I haven't heard of it. So I don't have that sort of thing happen. Or if there's anything that's going to potentially generate media interest, or has generated, media interest for some reason, it's always good to report it to the board. We probably all know about it anyway, but just in case. And anything that might inform any future strategic decision that we might make. So, for example, at some point we may have to decide on which trunk main, needs to be upgraded at a particular time. It's not busy, it's an operational thing, but we've got to vote the money for it. If we know from previous experience, from these reports, that's a consistent problem, we know it's there sitting in the back of our minds, we've got, okay, yeah, let's do that. That's the only thing I can think of.
The PVA stuff is, I've just noted there, but that's been finalised now through the setting of the PFAS limits, and happy to report we don't have any concern at this point in time with that, so that's a good thing.
I don't know whether we should be putting our own sort of information out there when you've got stuff in the paper about the Blubula River having foam on it and all this sort of stuff. Maybe we should be putting out that we need testing on the water.
when this blew up, it was just before you came on and around about the same time, and get Gavin to write a press release. We produced a press release on exactly that.
It's back in the paper now.
But we never put it out there because it was there just in. It was just in case. So in your paper somewhere is probably that press release.
There's also, we do report on the website the results of the testing that we do, which obviously publicly available, but that was a requirement by Health, New South Wales Health as well. So we do any of the reports or testing that we undertake, make sure they're populated on our website. And the links to, there's a few links in there we can put on the website as well that people are interested in knowing more about it.
I'll just an example, and people text me with the link to the article regarding the phone, you know what I mean? So you sort of go, well, it'd be nice if there was more information out there saying we're on top of it and we do our testing and it's no issues with it. We're higher up in the catchment than what that is and all that sort of thing. So,
I don't know,
what's going on with Blackburn? On the radio
and true, Mr. Chairman, that did get some play time on the ABC News as well.
It did.
The foam in the river.
It was 16,000 times more, too much PFAS. Yeah. That was quite difficult to figure that it was a bit.
It was not coming from us.
The confusing part about it was they were talking sometimes about PFOS rather than PFAS. But I understand, and you may have to correct me if I'm wrong, that PFOS is a sub.
It's
part of PFAS.
It is a subcategory.
Some of those acronyms can be very confusing.
Yeah. Just think all bad. All equals bad. Look, I think we touched on the. I've mentioned before about the water portfolio meeting at the JO. So we've had meetings on that. We've had our meeting with the minister. It's all mentioned there. Do you want to talk about any more of that other than what's here in the report?
The other thing I'd maybe just highlight, the Belugula Water Security Project, and it was really a good opportunity to meet with the DQ staff who are managing the project. And John was very vocal at the meeting and in fact, at the PCG meeting following that attendance, there was a comment by the chair saying that it was a good meeting, very informative. So thank you for that. That was very, very positive. We're also just seeing that change occur with the project manager in particular in addressing our concerns. There was obviously that discussion with the minister around our concerns that they weren't being addressed, and I forwarded some emails to her water advisor, who was going to then follow up with the project team to make sure that our concerns were being heard. But there has been a shift, so that's been really positive.
That's good.
Even to the extent that now they've got a second stage of the assessments that they've openly called out what our operational strategies or what we'd agree to in terms of operational process. So that's been really good. So thank you for that support in that space. And any other questions that councillors might have?
Make a comment on the Belugula. My biggest issue with it is their transparency. I think the transparency, I know you've got in there about Orange, the lack of consultation with Orange, but there's a hell of a lot of communities who are involved other than just Orange. Yes. And the lack of transparency is just, to me, is that, and this confidentially, this idea of this confidentiality that they keep pushing down the throats. And I'll be honest, I've written to the Privacy Commission around it. I think this is completely wrong. This is a state government that's just hiding the decision-making process. I reckon that's absolutely wrong. And I just said, I think that, to me, that's more, one of the areas we've got to push them is that their transparency is absolutely non-existent. And I'm sorry I wasn't able to meet that. I was down at the other conference down in Sydney, and I was going to Zoom into it, and I just got my days mixed up between too many things to do, but that's all. But, you know, I feel a real issue with
that. We discussed a confidentiality issue with the minister and got her commitment to talk to the PCG, talk to DQ, and about relaxing some of the restrictions on the PCG to enable Charlie to be able to report back here, for example, to the board with a little bit more detail that he's been, you know, feels that he's comfortable with. We're dealing with public money.
But this is a business case.
We are all experienced councillors. We understand, you know, there's going to be confidentiality for some things. But, you know, like if there's a business issue, you know, and quotes and contracts and all that sort of stuff. But what they've set up here is effectively a black box from which we can't even see into. And that was my concern when I came onto council board before, when I asked the previous general manager about, you know, okay, how much money has been spent on this project? It's a project being run by Water Infrastructure New South Wales at the time. How much money has been spent? What have they done? And he wasn't able to answer the question because he had no idea, because they weren't providing that information. And this same setup was occurring with this PCG.
And that was just really, Mr. Chair, it still occurs, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's a difference between how we run projects. If it's an internally run project, we have full oversight of all elements of the project development, project delivery, etc. This, because it's been delivered by the state government, they're doing it at arm's length.
Mm.
To the extent that on the PCG, they give us we're on time or we're within budget. Okay, can you give me a cost versus actual of your expenditure? No, that's not for PCG members. So there's still the black box that they ring fence this in, and the PCG members, it takes a lot even to get our point of view across. It's not the way it should be run, absolutely. The engagement piece has been poor at best.
So it turned out it's $7 million of the state government's money, but $7 million of taxpayers' money, that's what it is.
It's actually half federal government's.
It's all taxpayers, it's all public money.
That's the point.
And we're not handing out contracts money.
And the last thing I want to see is for it to have gone into some senior bureaucrat's hollow log, which is really the reality. And the more that they obfuscate about it, the more it gives them the opportunity to do that. And I used to work for the state government. I know how it works. I don't want to see that with this project. So we just keep the pressure on. We're having a meeting, so a few of the mayors and general managers of the relevant councils and ourselves are going to have another meeting with the minister in a few weeks' time to really hammer that point.
Oh.
About transparency in particular.
Well, my issue is that we're going to get to the end of this, and we're not going to be offered an alternative. We're going to be told what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my view has always been put the spanner in the works all the way through. So, you know, you like a chess move, you look 9 moves ahead, you think, where is this going to head? What could happen? What are the possible paths that could go down? And you make sure that you cut off all the ones you don't want to have anything to do with. And so that's why every time we start to see something that's veering in a particular direction, straight off to the minister.
And we have, as I said, the you can see the shift with the project team now. They're like really starting to take notice of our comments and take on board. So whilst the risk was initially we had no control over what the outcomes of this thing was going to be, now they're actually starting to take notice. So that's been really positive. If there's anything, I've been very excited about the change in their approach to this. They're talking to us about the, even to the extent of the treatment plants. So there was no commentary before on treatment plants and what the impacts of the quality of water is going to be. Now they're going to consider that in the cost estimates. So there is a bit of a move, which is good.
And this was, I'm sure, not unrelated to what Councillor Newstead was saying, you know, in that meeting. You were talking about the realities of transferring water back from, really, you know, the mud on the bottom of Carcor Dam across the other way. We'd have to up. If they were only ever considering just the pipeline, it's not just the pipeline. You've also got to upgrade all of our water quality infrastructure for that thing. So that change has been made. The other thing that came out of the minister's meeting was she was adamant that Treasury will not agree to any project, any option that doesn't have town water supply as its highest priority. And that was a point that we wanted to get across, because the issue was effectively the two arms of this. One is Water New South Wales, one is us. We've got very, very different priorities. So we're dealing with the town water supply. They're interested in the water for irrigation and for the mine. We wanted to make sure that town water supply was the key highest priority. And she basically reiterated very forcefully, did she not, that Treasury will not agree to funding anything at all unless it had town water supply as the highest priority. Yeah. So that was great. It was good to get
that. There's only sense, isn't it, that you don't put a pipeline in and then expect to put this dirty water back into a beautiful, pristine dam. I mean, that's just...
Well, we wouldn't allow it anyway.
No, we would not.
Yeah. All right, look, in the interest of moving right on, are there any further comments or questions about all of that? There's been a lot happening in the last couple of months, as we mentioned before. It's been positive, but it's involved a bit of pushing, lobbying, and a bit of hard work.
Good work, boys. girls.
So I might put all of that all in favour.
Aye.
That's carried. I think we've reached to the end of those staff reports. There's an item late reports there. There are no late reports, I see. Is there late reports? Moving on, questions on notice. Are there any questions on notice?
No questions on notice.
Okay, so we'll move to confidential matters. The recommendation is that the business for the ordinary meeting is now concluded. Council proceed into committee of the whole, confidential committee of the whole, in fact, to discuss the items referred to in the report. And this relates to report, section 11 report to ICAC.
We're not recording.
Just need to read out the reason why it's...
The reason why is the matter is considered to be confidential under section 10A subsection 2G of the Local Government Act as it deals with advice concerning litigation or advice that would otherwise be privileged from production in legal proceedings on the ground of legal professional privilege. So could I have a mover, please? Councillor Newstead, seconder. Councillor Best. Yes. All in favour? Moving to confidential. That's carried. Can I ask the stop? Councillor Newstead, all in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're coming out of confidential, coming into back into the normal meeting. And we have a motion to... accept the recommendations of the committee of the, which is actually the confidential committee of the whole?
Yes.
Correct?
Yep.
Recommendations of the committee of the whole be adopted. Mover, please. Councillor Newstead, seconded to Councillor Parlett. All in favour?
Aye.
All right. And I think what we have to do is finish the minute.
Yes.
The date is the 29th. Is it 29th?
Yes.
Yes, whatever it is in there. That's the next meeting. It being now 12:59, I'll call the meeting closed. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
It was great.